Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's February 18th, 2022, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 462. I'm your host, Rob Zagny, but right now I'm streaming Anacrusis with the crew, so you can stop what you're doing and check it out right now live on twitch.tv/waypoint.
The Anacrusis, that's what they call us.
And today I'm joined by Patrick Klopik.
Hello.
Renata Price.
Howdy, gamers.
And our producer, Ricardo Contreras.
Yo.
So, Ren and I are coming to you hot from the realms of chaos, basically. we have been just up to our eyeballs in chaos. It's foul taint. We've been contemplating...
It's what?
Foul taint.
It's foul taint. Listen, Rob and I have been neck deep in foul taint for the last 2 days.
We don't usually get a fucking podcast title in the first minute, but...
There was a great maw, and we've been contemplating it. We've been standing right on the edge.
How close is the great maw to the foul taint? Like the same neighborhood?
They're actually on the opposite sides of the world. The great maw actually runs all the way through the world, and like it's actually the equator is called the great taint.
Yeah.
So we have been playing on stream the last couple of days Warhammer 3, Total War Warhammer 3. Sorry, I didn't want to imply that, like, hey, they made a third Warhammer tabletop game. Surprise! The old world has changed yet again. We've been playing Total War Warhammer 3 on stream. I think it just came out yesterday when you are listening to this. And we've been doing some different things with it. We've been having sort of a variety platter of Warhammer experiences. And I would say they've been uneven. But Ren, I am curious, like, what's your background with, I know you're like broadly like into strategy games. Where are you at in terms of like Total War?
Total War, I played Three Kingdoms. I really liked it. I didn't get super far in any campaigns, but I played it and I was like, this is good. This makes my brain feel good. And if I was going to really get into a Total War style game, it would be Three Kingdoms, right? And then when I was working for Fanbyte as an intern, I went to a press event for Troy and actually really, really liked what they were doing with Troy, because that game was like really interesting and has like interesting like ideas about how history works and how we like approach history. And so I ended up like really liking that game, and then haven't played much of it since. And I'm now arriving to Total War Warhammer, which is like an older, based on like an older model of the series, and I'm very interested.
Side note, Ren, you and I should go back and play a little bit of Troy, because I think they released a patch later that always seemed to me like maybe it was a coward's patch, where it was like, what if we just made Troy more like Warhammer in some ways? Because there was a lot of pushback, people being like, no, I want to play with like the Greek mythology shit. And so people were like pissed that there weren't like Pegasi cavalry flying around. And I think that's bullshit.
Howard's patch. I challenge all developers who have worked on games that listen to this podcast. Do you have your own story of a coward's patch? A give to the community because your studio or the people above you were cowards and gave in to the gamers?
Your hateful, stupid community that was like, no, we want the boring and familiar and predictable thing. And they just like tramp all over your vision. And you got to be like, all right, well, here you go. Here's the thing. That was my view.
Because that's a bummer, because the cool thing about Troy is that for folks who haven't played it, Troy is basically a video game that was like So what if the Minotaur was just a really big guy? What if the Minotaur was actually just a dude who's 10 foot four and just like absolutely wrecks normal people? And that's so fucking dumb and fun that I cannot help but love it. Same thing with the Gorgon. The Gorgon is just a really pretty, really scary lady who is so pretty and so scary that she causes an army-wide debuff on your opponents. And like, it's just like a... Okay, Total War Troy is like a History Channel version of history, mm-hmm. and that is why I love it. That's why I loved it, because it felt like playing like a weird History Channel show where like, we think that the Minotaur might actually just be a buff guy. And it's like, you don't fucking know that, but you know what? It's really funny if that's what it is.
You get some guy from like a second tier, like Midlands University in the UK, who's like, we don't really know what the legend of the labyrinth refers to, but we can make some guesses. And what we think is it was this building that provides this set of bonuses to all settlements in the region. That's very much Troy. And it's very much like the Brad Pitt movie Troy, which also attempted to be like, what if, oh man. So go listen to, sorry, go support Thrones Ahead on Patreon, in addition to Waypoint Plus. Listen to the conversation I had with Troy Goodfellow about the movie Troy. Because basically, like, Brad Pitt's Troy is directed by Wolfgang Petersen. And you're like, Das Boot Wolfgang Petersen? And the answer is yes. The guy who made Das Boot made a movie about the Siege of Troy starring Brad Pitt as Achilles and Brian Cox's Agamemnon, which is every bit as good as you hope.
The phrase Brian Cox's Agamemnon is my activation phrase. I am currently on my way to kill a president.
And by the way, the entire thing is about what if, you know, the Siege of Troy is a timeless story. What if it's about Bush era politics and militarism?
It's everyone's favorite thing.
Oh, it's great. It's 100% like, you know, Menelaus is basically George Bush and Agamemnon is like Dick Cheney. And it rules. It's an absurd movie. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, points, that has nothing to do with Warhammer. People looked at Troy and they were like, where is the like wild mythology shit? Well, here comes Total War Warhammer 3. And I think we found it. I think we found like all the wild mythological shit in Warhammer. And so I gotta be honest with you here. Do you ever sometimes kind of hate the groupthink dynamics of Twitch chat? Do you ever like pose a question and immediately regret you posed it? Because you know what they're gonna do. You know what they're gonna do. You ask with everyone here, I feel like I could ask a really simple question. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you want to be like a more standard human faction, or do you want to serve chaos? And I feel like this group of people, okay, well, Kato's eyebrow going up like that doesn't make me feel confident, but I feel like in a reasonable group of people, we could have an exchange of ideas about, do we want to be a human faction?
I really doubt that. Pretty sure we'd all choose chaos. Pretty sure,
Rob
like,
is
if
really
we
pro oligarchy.
Well, okay, maybe my assumptions were just wrong. Maybe it would have happened even if it were just in this room.
Would you like to have a lot of fun, or would you like to be boring as shit? Let me just consider my two options and consider the pros and cons of this approach.
Wow.
Rob is forgetting also that I was actively campaigning for the faction that we played the first stream, which I regret doing because it was fucking awful, because it was a bad time. Fuck Zinch. This is a Zinch haters podcast. But no, I do agree that allowing chat to pick it was a bit of a, well, here's the thing. We let them pick again, but
we gave them three votes.
Yeah.
We gave them three votes. Yeah. That was too
bad. Yeah. This is a democracy, damn it.
Votes.
That was too much democracy.
They kept voting for more votes was the problem. So to give you like the sketch of like what is Total War Warhammer 3 and what's different, I guess, from the previous ones. So the way I put it on the stream was that Total War Warhammer 1 takes place in the old world. It's all about like dwarves fighting orcs and like the fake Holy Roman Empire thing. You know, trying to deal with its fucking vampire counts. They're trying to stir up shit. But looming over all of it is that the forces of chaos might be awakening. They might burst forth into the world and unleash apocalyptic danger. Mm. And so the end game of like Total War Warhammer 1 is like, oh shit, the chaos invasion is here. Now you just need to weather the storm and eventually like get chaos back down in its hole. The second game is, a lot of people loved it. I kind of bounced off of it. It's much more like, so what if the world of Total War Warhammer did 15th and 16th century colonialism in South America and South and Central America, and met like factions there. And also there's chaos and elves and shit, but like broadly, that's kind of what it's doing. This third game, got a big rock and roll finale. You gotta finish strong. So it's all about the chaos. It opens with fake Russia, Kislev, their bear god, has been slain in a chaos plot, or at least like badly wounded. The forces of chaos are now like instantiated on the world and walking the earth. They're not coming through portals. They're just here. And so the new factions are like Kislev, which is like fake, like medieval Russia. You've got Cathay, which is fake China. And then you've got the armies of chaos. And so when people were like, give us the armies of chaos, we made a huge mistake.
Fuck Tzeentch. Yo, we did not.
Ren, you want to talk through what went wrong with Tzeentch? What's going on with chaos in this game?
So, okay. Total War Warhammer 3 is a game built around like hard counters. So like every faction has like a thing that they do extremely, extremely well. And there is a faction or a unit that will absolutely fucking own them across the board, basically in any situation. And you have to either lean into your strengths and only fight factions that you're capable of fighting, or really put effort into shoring up those defenses and get building your own hard counters in, right? And Tzeentch's whole thing is that they're a faction built around like magic and doing a lot of spells and like hitting enemies with like long range attacks and like debuffs, all this shit, right? Their units are dog shit and require a ton of micromanaging that is extremely annoying and hard to do. So we would basically go into battles and get absolutely shredded against people with just like good units, sure, but like, we're not talking like we're not getting shredded by like the best units in the game. We're getting like absolutely owned by like mid-tier warriors who just like have enough armor that we couldn't do anything about it. And so Tzeentch for us was basically just getting rolled over and over again because the amount of fucking mechanics involved were just ridiculous. Like Tzeentch's like basic like mechanic behind that faction is that they're all about change, right? Cool, fun. The problem is that like their basic mechanic is this barrier. So like all of our units had like an opening shield that didn't read to us at all. Like we were playing and people were like, yeah, all your units have a shield. And we were like, sure they fucking do. My guy like could have fooled me.
Meanwhile, they're melting.
Just getting ruined. And then chat was like, yeah, what you have to do is you have to send your units in, let them get melted so their barriers drop and then pull them out again. When you're talking about like a 20 unit army, you're talking about like micromanaging literally 20 units of like barriers, making sure everyone's shit is up. And then also we spawned directly next to our hard counter faction, which was those like big armor guys. And eventually by the end of the stream, we like picked a path that actually let us like put up a fight. And that was just by really investing in this ability called like Plague of Rust, which severely reduces enemy armor. And then like a couple of different spell abilities. And then with those together, we were able to actually start like putting up a fight against this faction. And it was a fucking nightmare.
Right. That's the thing. Like we ended strong. Like after a couple battles where like we would just watch our armies get demolished by these fucking space marine looking guys with like horned helms and shit. They would just like wreck us. We finally like just went all in on spells that, yeah, like shattered armor on the enemy. And we won a real nail biter of battle. It was fun, but it was also like in retrospect, I think Ren and I were talking about this morning, like, was that even good? Because the nature of a game of hard counters is that, like, what I was doing was just spamming these spells as the cooldown lifted. That was the, felt a lot like, what if an MMO encounter were a, like, Warhammer battle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of how it worked. And, like, it was kind of satisfying to finally, like, see those units that had been impossible to kill start to just melt under the fire of our pink Slimer guys. All our units look like Slimer. Different flavors of Slimer.
Okay. It's true. Okay, I'm back on board.
imagine Slimer on upsetting legs. Yeah.
Upsetting legs Slimer.
Upsetting legs. Yes, yeah.
Even and better. Maybe,
a concerning amount of tongue. And
yeah. As Slimer fire. Does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and shoots fire. Sick. Shoots
yeah.
Fire. I don't see how this so could go wrong.
He runs out of fire ammo.
Oh,
but pretty like quickly. Because we keep spamming like the armor debuff, their units finally become vulnerable to us. They start dying. We win. But even there, it's like, so what was the tactic? Well, it was just to keep applying the hard counter.
And that was like a huge bummer. But today, today we switched factions. We left the Zinj, those motherfuckers. And we switched over to the Cathay, and specifically a faction led by like the Stone Dragon dude, who just like our guy Zhao Ming has spent a lot of time hanging out around the Great Maw, and people are beginning to become concerned about how much time our guy Zhao Ming spends around the Great Maw. But here's the thing: in our experience, he seems to be very effective. At which point, I don't think it's really necessary to kind of chastise him for the amount of time he spends around the Great Maw, because it's clearly working.
Look, just because everyone else has, like, lots of psychosexual hangups doesn't mean he has them. Like, he can contemplate the Great Maw.
It's really easy. He can, like, and also he's friends with the orcs. Ogres. Sorry, not the orcs, the ogres. He's buddies with the ogres. The ogres are like, this guy's all right. So he can recruit them very easily. We didn't do that, but the second faction. Oh, he's faction,
huge in alchemy.
He's this fucker loves alchemy. We were playing, and at one point, we get an NPC interaction in the diplomacy screen, and literally, this fucker goes, "Don't, I was busy doing my alchemy, but I'll make time for you." Which, like, wow, don't text, got an alchemy. Absolutely invested in transmuting my potions. But this faction is built around this mechanic of like a yin yang mechanic. Of like swinging, like
literally.
From like literally, yes. Of like swinging from one side to the other and like keeping balance. And so there is a faction, like a global level, that is about your upkeep costs and is about your construction costs. Great, cool. There's also a per battle level where, depending on your troop formations and how close different units are to one another, you will get different bonuses depending on how far you are swung in each direction. And also, if you have yin and yang units near each other, they get bonuses. And so at first, Rob was extremely worried that this would be a very micro-heavy faction.
I was pissed when I realized this mechanic.
He was so mad. But there was a battle on this fucking stream that felt so fucking good. Rob and I activated Tactical Masterminds mode and took a fight that we were billed to lose pretty decisively. That was like I forget if it was a valiant defeat or a decisive defeat, but we were billed to lose this fight. And we absolutely fucking wrecked them on every front, every flank. We took out their command. It was gorgeous.
And it was all through, it was like through the combination of rather than being so much about hard countering, it was more like there's an element of positioning, classic Total War stuff of like using terrain really effectively. But also it was kind of fun seeing the way that like the Cathay army, because units have either a yin aspect or a yang aspect and they want you to sort of interleave them. It does create like it does become a really positioning centered army because those units sort of have to stand in position relative to each other. To get the most out of them. And then all your little like heroes just have ridiculous buffs and like abilities that they can drop. And we had, so we started the campaign with these ridiculous like rocket launchers. And what we realized is that they're the most powerful artillery unit like that we have maybe in the game. But we also had an alchemist, different alchemist, but like a hero unit alchemist as opposed to a lord who commands the armies. And she was one, very cool. Two, she had an ability to create massive bonuses to range units. So she just stood there with the archers, but particularly with that artillery, cast a huge like armor smashing bonus on them. And so like in one volley of those rockets, we watched like one of their best units, the type of unit that had given us like fits the day before, it like dissolved in like what, one hit?
Yeah, like we watched half of their troops just get taken out by one artillery blast. And the best part was that like we had positioned this unit in such a way that, so like to describe this battle a little bit more, we were on a bit of a hill, and there was a maw in the middle of the map. And then
not a great maw, just like every
just
day.
A minor maw. We're talking like a regular standard maw. It's got the teeth, it's got the wet, but it's not like the great maw that everyone's always talking about. And so there's also a rock spire. And so what Rob and I did was we used the rock spire and the maw as a choke point and then put the majority of our forces at that choke point and then faced our artillery towards the other side. And so we had this like small detachment of spear units up top that those fuckers put in so much work. Did they get kills? Not really. But those peasants held out against like some really strong units because they were being supported with the yin yang bonuses and also because of this like constant stream of like artillery fire that was like protecting them and helping shred this flank. And so the real turning point of the battle is the very beginning. We broke their left flank where they were like trying to like really hit us immediately. They did not even get the chance to start hitting us because the artillery just shredded them. And then,
as described in that clip from Gettysburg during our Waypoint 101 stream, we're having to walk a mile over open ground under artillery fire. Not good. Not good. Not good in a civil war. Not good when fighting Cafe in the land of the Great Maw.
Absolutely blasted. And then they had a detachment of archers that we couldn't hit with our artillery units. There's one thing that Rob and I have neglected to mention at this point. The lord of our army, Zhao Ming, can turn into a big dragon. He can just turn into a big dragon. And what we had done was, well, we had buffed this alchemist to be great at buffing people and great at support. She was like really a tactical mastermind. Zhao Ming is a big dragon, and he's so good at hitting dudes. He's just so good at rolling in there. And when I say rolling in there, I mean literally rolling in there. Like, he flies and then does a barrel roll over people, and it just, like, watching peasants fly. Just, like, it doesn't matter which side they're on. We're talking about our peasants go flying, their peasants go flying. People are going fucking everywhere as Zhao Ming just full strength crashes into the ground.
And no, and don't worry. He's got a breath weapon that shoots an expanding cone of fire, too.
And so like shreds.
And he's fast because he flies. So like he was doing all his spellcaster stuff on the front line of the left flank. Left flank started to look really good. That right flank was looking shaky. Those archers, we couldn't get at them. And we were like, time to be a dragon and fly over there and sort this out ourselves. And yeah, he did. He was just like, had them up against the rock plinth. And was just like mercilessly like grinding them. It was brutal. They were like literally melting, and it was a great battle. And I think we got the sweetest payoff, which was the general tried to flee, and we had an entire regiment of like musketeers basically along the path of his retreat. And so this one little dude was trying to run away from the big dragon. And then, like, literally, it was, like, the end of Bonnie and Clyde. Just got, like, machine gunned for, like, 10 minutes by these people. It was amazing.
It was, like, it was almost uncomfortable because you're watching him run past, and Rob and I were like, And then all of our musketeers start reloading and then slowly turn behind them, aim, and then literally 100 bullets just dust everywhere as his like icon disappears from the screen in a cloud of dust.
Yeah. It was great.
Absolutely shredded them. And then, it was so good.
So, like, I think, so the, like, the lows of yesterday, like, I'm still intrigued by Tzeentch because, like, maybe there's something to his mechanics. It seems like you have to really, maybe if you do micro all this and, like, come to grips with all those, like, cool abilities, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. But Cathay is much more, like, fun right out of the box. But I think overall, the other thing that, it like, I'm gleaning from this is they're now really pushing faction design harder than maybe I've ever seen it pushed in Total War. Like, even when I went back and played Total War Warhammer 2, I guess maybe it felt like there were a lot of, like, faction-specific mechanics, but I don't know. Like, they did not feel, they felt maybe a little more hacked together and maybe a little more, like, interchangeable, like a lot of different names for really similar dynamics across factions. Here it does feel like, okay, so each of these guys is playing a different game. Like, basically what they've got in common is money and magic, and beyond that, it's all different.
At one point, Rob and I opened a menu. The game was like, open this menu, and it introduced a new magic mechanic, and both Rob and I immediately put our head in our hands to be like, all right, here we go. Time to figure out what the fucking, like, winds of magic are in this specific faction. And, like, even, like, even the economies, like, the economy mechanics are different because, like, the characters we're just playing as the Cathay do all of their stuff through through money. All of their research, everything is done through money versus the Tzeentch army, which used grimoires to do all of their research. So they had two currencies. They had a research currency, and then they had a, like, I believe this is the case, right? The Cathay used money for their research, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so there were two currencies you had to manage, and so, like, two economies to work on, at least on the Cathay side. Sorry, on the Tzeentch side. And, like, all that shit's really cool, even if I don't think it, like, comes together perfectly in every situation. I am very much a games are fun when they are breakable and take big swings kind of person, and I do think that, like, there are very much moments where this game is doing that and giving you that feeling of, like, am I supposed to be allowed to do this? Like, when we first applied the armor piercing buff to our artillery and just absolutely decimated, there was that really good feeling of, like, should I be allowed to do this? But that feeling was underpinned with the good positioning and good tactical level.
Yeah, and I think maybe, like, we had to work for it a little bit, but it wasn't like the spells were just appearing out of the ether entirely. Like, it's still dovetailed. But I do think there's a lot of fun with, you can do this more in a single player game where it's like, you know, sometimes if it all comes together right, you should just be able to smash the game balance into little bitty pieces and have it. Now, the other side can do it to you. We just haven't run into those people. But, like, I am really intrigued, actually, about, like, how when we run up against chaos, because, like, you can, as you're developing your heroes, you are sort of speccing them out for, like, what types of things they'll be good at. We were sort of fighting the war that was in front of us, which was, like, much more conventional, like, intra-Cathay, like, scrimmages. But the cost of that was, I don't think we were really taking a lot of steps to get our people ready for dealing with chaos heroes.
I don't know. I think that at least for one faction, we were basically perfectly suited to fight the faction that had been crushing us last time.
Yeah.
Because we had the anti-armor capabilities across the board. We're talking about debuffs, but we're also talking about those, like, incredible armor-piercing abilities. We also had just gotten an ability on our main hero at the end of the campaign, or at the end of today's playthrough, where we, every single time we cast a spell, we give all nearby allies a magic buff, a armor piercing and damage buff. And we also had an AoE spell that provided an armor piercing and damage buff. And so basically whenever we use that, we're basically getting 1.5 times the bonuses. And against enemies that we really struggled against last time, those armor piercing, those, like, high armor, high damage enemies, we're going to absolutely shred them if we come up against them, which is, like, really exciting. The thing that I am worried about is the Tzeentch, right? Is the psychology-based characters. We didn't mention was with the Tzeentch, they are based around the game's fear mechanic.
Right.
And it makes me wonder if maybe the Tzeentch are incredibly, incredibly good at handling people and bad at handling other chaos armies.
There's something I do need to cop to, and this is going to make Patrick angry.
Please.
Unmuted.
Rob looks like he's about to cry.
So when we begin our Tsinch campaign, we every campaign is like, here's some starter quests. Here are some like first things you should do. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to march all the way up this like linear valley and leave these guys on my back who also hate me. These corn cultists. This god of corn. So I ignored the fact that like multiple quests were like, go in this direction. Go northeast through this valley, through these really easy guys, mm-hmm. and then go fight Cafe. That was the opening thing the game was like, hey, get up in Cafe's face.
I didn't know this.
You were there, but you might not have noticed like what I was ignoring when I decided like no.
Look, I would trust Rob, seasoned strategy vet, yeah. running the stream, making choices. Rob! You do you. Let's go. Screw these opening quests. Go do your thing.
People in the chat were asking, so why did you start in this direction? Why? And I was like,
at our hard counter faction.
Yeah. So because crucially, we were fighting Khorne, which is all like God of War and Bloodshed and all that shit. But crucially, all their units, like every single one, is immune to fear. The only thing that makes our faction viable is that the fucking Slimers scare people. Like, they're not strong units, but, like, they spook people. And we fought the faction that can't be spooked.
That is a universal immune to psychology buff. Do not give these men a therapist. They will not respond well.
Now,
they got severe anxiety disorders.
So...
Cognitive
basically,
therapy, Hugh.
I just started the campaign off and it was like, hey, the first act of this campaign is in this direction. I was like, I'm going to go in this direction because it makes intuitive sense to me. If I were playing a different Total War game, that would have made intuitive sense to me. But instead, what I basically did was like, I am going to pick the like strongest and hardest stone wall. I'm going to beat my head against it for this entire opening day stream.
I love it. I would love to play an action game without the armor spell just because it feels better. So how'd that wall feel?
Bad. Like it. So terrible. Hang on. It demonstrated one of my, like when I said like one of my issues with Warhammer, the Total War Warhammer games is that they can be like super ticky tacky hard countery. I think I ably demonstrated that because I went up against a faction that we literally could not fight.
Okay.
And so even in defeat, I am victorious for I'm vindicated.
And the other thing is, like, we couldn't actually, here's the thing. It's tinky-tacky hard countery, but also, like, had we gone the other way and buffed up our troops, we could have started our campaign against the Khorne with those armor reduction spells. I'm just noting. It didn't click for me until just now how fucking badly we owned ourselves in the early portion of that campaign.
I appreciate you saying we. I appreciate that because it was like... Now, mind you, if we'd continued playing it, we had finally actually gotten through into a really good position. Like, we were now sitting pretty. But yes, it did mean that entire first day was a nightmare. And
oh, you didn't give up?
No.
No. No.
No. No.
Because I knew Patrick. The theory was sound.
Patrick.
My God.
The theory was sound and we fucking did it. And also, Rob, of course I'm going to say we, because like, we're a team. I am your chancellor here.
You hear that, Patrick? That's fucking teamwork.
I think that's called enabling. I think that's called, there are other words. I'll leave it at that. But you know, I mean, whatever, you know, I'm glad you had a great stream.
You know what? You know what, Patrick? I enabled Rob's fucking victory. All right. Nope. Yeah, I enabled victory.
I will note. Good point. Ren, like as chief of staff, like watching in the background, like, hey, that unit's starting to buckle. Hey, that ability's off cooldown. I was like, I am playing at a higher level than I've ever played before, because like Ren is just like grabbing by the shoulder and be like, click that button now. Stop being inefficient. And I'm like, yes, I will stop being inefficient. It's beautiful. Who needs co-op? Just play with Ren. Also, I think Ren and I would be nothing but good for each other. Did you know that they make little, there's like keypads with like dials and gadgets and like OLED displays that you can like infinitely customize. Like you can take this entire keyboard that I have with its attached lapdog, throw it out the window. because you can customize these fascinating little, like,
people in your home would like to be thrown out the window.
Yeah. And like,
are you just talking about like a Steam Deck or not Steam Deck, Stream Deck sort of situations? It's just buttons you're putting macros on?
Yes,
no, but
you can put macros on the buttons, but also you have a little dial that when you turn the dial, it changes the layer and it has a little screen on it that shows you what every button does. And so you don't have to actually like put, you can, every layer can be different and you can always know what they do because you just turn it and then it displays up top. It's like, this is what I do. And you just like click, 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 click. Incredible.
Yeah. So see, like, I think there's a lot of like positive directions we can go. Like,
yeah, what I've learned in the past 2 weeks is that what Rob was missing was more things to think about in terms of his efficiency, inefficiency ratio. And somehow we hired someone to just like enable all of those bad habits because as it turns out, they're aware of things you could get. They could remedy this and things you could think about and things you could research, things you could buy.
I am so thrilled that Ren kept that particular flag under wraps during the interview process. Like, it was like, there she is flying under a neutral flag across the ocean.
No.
And now it's like, boom, keyboards. And like, I think Patrick would have been like, oh, heel support, get ready to engage. But now it's too late.
It's
She's
too late,
here.
But also. Watch your fucking shit, Rob. I still have that neutral flag. I still have that neutral flag. It's just we so happen to be aligned on this particular particular front, and I will stand with you as a stalwart ally.
For the
moment.
Watch
your shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
I can't deal with keyboard stuff too much right now. I don't know if Stream noticed, but y'all might notice that the speakers are currently in a new configuration behind me. And if you're looking closely, you might wonder, hey, where are those ribbon tweeters? Where are those long ribbon tweeters that like are the star of that speaker? Why is there a hole where they used to be in the beautiful wooden frame? And that is because they are now on their way to Florida to be repaired.
No.
Or they're just on their way to Florida.
They're with Zinch on their way to Florida. Sending to the farm up Florida State.
How much does it cost to ship those things to Florida?
We are going to find out today. I loaded them into the car. My partner had an appointment like next door to the FedEx place. By the way, there's only like one FedEx place in the area that has like the boxes to ship.
I was going to say, you must have had to like call in advance, describe what you were shipping. Like, you can't just show up with the car lugging in these speakers. But, like, you got enough foam to fill these with?
I can tell you that the guy is charging us a large amount of money to do the repair. We are going to have to eat the shipment back to us, which is going to be way more expensive because they will be repaired. And that, like, right now, we don't really care what happens to the speakers in transit because, like, basically they're going to be stripped down and, like, refurbed, like, regardless.
He can deal with whatever little scratches.
But when they come back to us, they have to be handled very delicately because, like, for instance, if a magnet gets knocked off its moorings in the, like, array, it will just, like, whip around like a bullet in the, like, because it's all arrays of magnets. It will just whip around like a bullet and shred that, like, literally irreplaceable foil. By the way, somebody wrote in and was like, Rob, you can just go to Parts Direct and, like, build your own ribbon tweeter. What are you doing, man? No, buddy. You need to look up reviews of the Carver Amazing Loudspeaker and look at the frequency response of that fucking ribbon tweeter, okay? I'm telling you.
Frequency response, you fucking dumbass.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this thing like stops at 2000 hertz. Great. It's fucking useless to me. Okay. Wow. This is trash. Come back to me when you find one of these that like goes up to 40,000 kilohertz and down to like 100 because that's what I need.
Is that a tweeter?
Anyway.
At that point?
No, it's not. It's not even like it's like that's why the whole ribbon is like yeah. the tweeter, you know, mid right. down to woofer. Anyway, point is. So yeah, that's where my life is at right now. lots of fun.
Incredible.
Yeah. I think so.
So next week you'll be able to give us an update. Like you'll have had a FedEx experience, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we'll know what we're dealing. We'll know what we're dealing with on part one of this okay. process.
We'll know how, I'm excited. How we've been talking about this for the better part of a year. I feel like.
Yeah. The speakers had a very brief heyday, and I got emotionally attached to them, and now it became my problem to make them work. And so it's like we were gifted a really fussy, annoying antique, like right before it was going to break. And now it's like, I guess I have to make this beautiful antique work. And now it's now all on me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're at. Anyway.
Finally going to find out how much money it takes to ship speakers to the foul taint. Florida. I can say that because I'm from there, damn it.
Yeah. This guy does give off I was doing my alchemy vibe too. over email. Speaking of weird gear, cool technology, Pat Kato.
Wow, he really did a whole circle there.
Our good friend
Picado.
Picado.
Patrick Austin Kato.
They've got a ship name. It's garbage. I love it when Picado stream together. I hope something happens there. So Kato.
Yeah.
I'm clicking on this game called Citizen Sleeper.
Yeah. Yeah, you
I
are.
Thought it was going to be like a mattress tycoon game. Not. Why do you explain what it is? Because it also looks maybe cool as hell.
It is cool as hell. It's cool as hell. And I only played like the first 4 hours of it because that's all that exists right now in a preview build. But Citizen Sleeper is a role-playing game that is set on a circular space station. You are a sleeper, which in this universe is essentially an uploaded consciousness into a mechanical body, synthetic body. And you've lost parts of your memory, of course. And this is one of the like main drives that you're like trying to figure out. But you also have to survive. So basically the way that the game works is that days there are called cycles because, you know, no day-night cycle other than the way that the fucking space station spins. Each cycle, you get a set of dice. 6 dice if you're well-rested, basically. And those dice will slot into various actions that you could do around the space station. So, like, if you need to go to work at the scrapyard, you drag one of the dice into the little scrapyard node and you hit go. And depending on what the number on that dice is, depends your outcome. You know, you get the numbers up front at the beginning of the day. So like you'll see like I have 2 ones, a 6 and a 4 and a 3.
Okay. So it's not like,
yeah,
you try to do a task and it's like, fuck you. It's like, you know what you're submitting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what you're submitting, but there is still some variance in that. The only thing that guarantees full success is a 6.
Mm.
At a 5, you have the possibility of a neutral or a full success. Neutral is like usually good outcome, just not as good as it could have been. And then 4 and 3 is a half chance of could go either way. You could get a full success. You could get a neutral outcome.
That.
You can get a full failure. 1 and 2 are you can get a neutral outcome or a failure, right? But it's either of those two. So, yeah, so you know that part up front. You know what you can slot in for the day. And this is where the game really gets interesting.
This feels like a life just goes wrong simulator. This sounds depressing as shit.
Oh, it is, buddy.
Oh, I've had entire years that unfolded according to these mechanics.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's good. It, like, the writing is really, really great. The dialogue is one of the easiest comparisons you can make to something recent is Disco Elysium, where like you have a dialogue running along the side and you get little choices as you go through. Those choices aren't shown as related to your stats, but I think they are, just given some of the options I've gotten that seem specific to the character I have, but they're not like being fronted if they are. But either way, they're like, it's really well written and really interesting, and it gives a really great view of kind of like the people that you're interacting with that feels kind of complex and what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, nuanced, really. Like, mm-hmm. you get the sense that if you were introduced to people in different orders, you might think differently about them, because, you know, you're always getting only like one side of the story, and then you eventually meet the other character that's on the other side of the story, and then you're like, oh, both of these people seem to be making a lot of sense in their own, like, from their own points of view. And so it's written really well to like kind of encompass and like make a world that feels like there aren't any black and white, like, good decisions as far as what the missions that you're like doing, mm-hmm. which aren't called missions, they're called drives. And it's kind of framed as like, this is a thing that you're like driven to do, like you're interested in doing because something like clicked in a dialogue where you're like, oh, now I have a new drive that is to help this person like fix their ship or whatever. It has really great illustrations and style as far as like the menus and stuff. Like, it looks really like slick. And so like going through your day, you're slotting in these dice, right? But of course, if you do certain things, you're going to start losing energy. Like, if you're going to work hard labor, you get more tired and you need to, feed yourself. You have to make money to feed yourself. And there's also a ticking clock of your body. The reason you're called a sleeper is that in this world, people sell their consciousness to corporations.
Feel like you should have started with that. Feel like you should have started with that bit. Feels like that was maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe should have started with that explanation of the premise.
Hey, yo, that's relevant.
Hey, so why am I consciousness in a body? Well.
Well. So they basically set up this world where, like, true AI sentience is outlawed, right? Like, robots and AIs can get right up to what has been deemed an illegal sentience.
Skynet will rebel and kill us all, but humans will submit themselves to capitalist prerogatives.
Exactly. That's literally it. They need a human consciousness in order to do the work well, but they cannot make sentience to run like an unbreakable body. So they get people to sell them their consciousness to rent them, and like you go to sleep, like your flesh body goes to sleep, and
this
they
is
put
a
you
horrible
in the,
sequel to
it's
Chappie.
It's fucking so good. Wild.
I haven't watched it. There's like a new, I think it's on Apple TV Plus, but like the premise of that show is another like similarly high concept in which. You can undergo a procedure to forget your work life, and you only experience out of work life.
No. Eternal sunshine of
you are still conscious. Like, you just are. Your two versions are unaware of yourself. Like,
oh God,
the separate self.
Oh no,
that sounds amazing.
Oh no,
it's supposed to be great. Like, I haven't watched it.
Maybe yet, if
like,
you're the not work conscious, what about the work conscious?
Oh, and like the two sides cannot speak to one another except under like extreme.
Hey, what is this called?
Circumstances can information be passed, and so you know you can start to imagine some. Yeah. And my understanding is the show like primarily focuses on like the emergence of like. The unconsciousness of like the work consciousness as they try to understand the weird place that they've been stuck
amazing.
In. But it like so immediately reminded cool. me that of like a similar sort of setup. They both sound like really interesting.
I'm not even to the best part.
Concept to pull at.
The best part is how this works out mechanically is that you've run away from that corporation. And the only reason your body stays together and in well working order is because that corporation wants it to be. There are these things called stabilizers that, like, without it, like, they've put planned obsolescence into the robot bodies so that if one escapes, it starts to die. So the ticking clock in this game for you is being able to find and purchase these stabilizers to keep yourself alive. Plus, obviously, the like narrative hook of wanting to like understand your past better. You like ran away so long ago that your memory is like has blanks in it because you've been kind of in just like in deep like robot sleep for ages. The setting itself is really cool. This station used to be a like a corporate headquarters, and then there was a workers' revolt, and so now it's taken over by like the last union that like overthrew the actual corporation and made it to like a livable workspace. But before, it was basically a company town that sold you on script and shit. And so like there's the descendants of those people are still living on the space station, but there's also still some of the like CEOs of that like were in charge back then have shifted into new positions of power in different ways in this new like society. It's just like really, really interesting stuff. And I think the dice mechanic and like kind of managing like, okay, what can I do today? And then there's even one more layer to this, which is hacking, which I fucking love. By being a kind of robotic consciousness in a human consciousness in a robotic body, you can like naturally hack things without like in a way that other people like do not have access to. And so there's running plots of like you going in and hacking. And what's really neat about hacking is that it unlike other actions, it requires a specific number.
Okay.
And it's usually low. It's usually ones and twos. So you can toss your ones and twos into hacking, but it has to be specifically a one or two unless you get your hacking skill up. I picked the character whose hacking skill is already at plus one, and then you get a second option. So I could either be a one or a three or something, but it has to be that specific number, and I can only do hacking when I have those roles. So there's a lot of things to kind of balance and poke around and discover in the world just by choosing what you're going to do. I'm helping a street vendor make better mushroom soup by finding mushrooms for him. He's the best. There's a whole plot line with the like surgeon that finds like is the first one who's able to find like the stabilizers that you need to survive, and her like getting wrapped up with a local gang, and like then you start to meet the gang and you're like. Yeah. Gang maybe is a strong word. It's really, there's just like a lot of really interesting interweaving narratives happening here. And it's just like, I'm very excited for this game to come out fully. I like exhausted. I got up to where basically all of my story threads are to the point where it says like, thanks for playing the beta. There's no more content here. And I, like that was like about 4 hours of just playing straight, and it was really, really cool. Like,
well, and this is another one from Fellow Traveler, right? Which is like an indie label that seems to have a really high hit rate in terms of like just interesting shit.
Yeah, this developer even made what's it called? I don't know if you all remember that narrative game called I think it was In Other Waters came out of
years ago. Yeah.
This is that same developer, and I feel like this the part of the problem I had with In Other Waters was that it felt a little too like single path forward in a way, like where this has a lot more of branching in it, like a lot more different options. There are places where like there are really great things that are set up through, here's the other reason this game is great, all of the there's a bunch of things that are tracked on clocks basically. Some of them are like just timers where it's like in a certain amount of cycles something will happen here and you'll come back and see what happens. Some of them is based on how well you do, like one of them was I am gonna help at this shipyard for no pay, but if I do a really good job, like if I get a full success instead of like just a neutral success, they'll eventually, I'll fill up this clock and they'll eventually unlock like a new like story beat where I like meet new characters. Or one where if I spent enough, there was like a little clock under the bar, it's like become a regular. Once I became a regular, I had a great little story moment with the bartender and like was able to start working there. There's a lot of things like that where it's like it doesn't immediately say you can just go work here. Like, you have to do the work to, like, become a person that people will talk to first before you get, like, more kind of mechanical and narrative options. And work, because work is limited, like, you're kind of making those choices that way of, like, having to, like, okay, I have to balance, like, the thing that I can do for actual money versus spending time over here at the bar drinking just to kind of become a regular versus tracking down where I can even get my next vial of stabilizer. And it's all, yeah, it's just like a really great premise, really well written characters, really, really, like, awesome illustrations.
And, okay, yeah, and Jump Over the Edge, yeah, that's Gareth Damian Martin's studio. So Gareth Damian Martin was a pretty prolific freelancer in the game space, and yeah, like, also made the zine Heterotopias.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. Yeah.
This is, thank you for describing my game of the year, Kato.
When this so thing hits, it's going to, yeah, we're done.
Legitimately.
2022.
Love to decay on a ring station.
Yeah.
Trying to dump my lousing dice rolls into crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds perfect.
I'm very excited. There's no set date on release.
Is this demo a press thing, or because the Steam is about to do a big demo rollout?
I believe that that's going to be available there. It was available for a short amount of time during the last time they did one of those, and I just missed it. I'm not 100% sure that it will, but keep an eye out. Like, you know, this is the like, hey, you should be following this on Steam and see it so you can look at it as soon as possible if what I've been describing sounds interesting to you, because it's made a very strong first impression. And, like, it's one of those things where I don't even care if my save will carry forward. I will replay those 4 hours and, like, make different choices and, like, be excited about that. Like, it sounds really cool.
This seems like kind of a hallmark year for, like, this style of game and, like, the style of, like, independent, really cool and, like, fascinating RPG. Because let's see, we got Citizen Sleeper. We have Norca.
Norca. Yeah, that...
Which seems so fucking cool.
I'm excited for,
like,
that,
like, games
too.
That are, like, very obviously inspired by, like, both, like, traditional adventure gaming, but also by, like, current trends in tabletop role-playing game design. Yeah. Like, everything you are describing, Kato, is, like, setting my TTRPG brain
yeah,
on
100%.
Fucking fire. I am
It's basically
so
a Blades in the Dark
excited.
Game, in a way, there, right? Oh, like, it's so good.
This is so fucking cool.
It's really
good year
really neat.
For a video game, maybe.
I was going to say, it's February 17th, and Red
right,
is ready to declare.
Year.
Also, just what a fucking great year for video games.
Names
best
two. Year. Names two. It's a banner year for this type of video game.
Listen, there's a bunch of these games coming. I thought it too. The other ones are filling later. You got it.
Fuck you. Listen. You know what? There are some that I didn't list because I don't know if they're going to be that good or not, but seem really neat to me specifically.
Could be
listen.
A banner year.
Could
not
be.
Not commit to
could
it yet. Got my eye on some things.
Me and my boy Jeff Keighley out here being like, this is a great...
Games are great. How do people feel about games? Games, answer this poll. Yes or no? Games or no games?
Games or no games? I'm out here with Jeff Keighley being like, I think games.
Consolidation. Is it good?
Listen, I think when one company owns all of the video games, that's good because I can sometimes play more of them.
What if all the games were on Game Pass? I mean, who could say?
It's... You know, never dreamed I'd see a thing like this. It's Master Chief making out with a troll from Warhunter, from World of Warcraft.
Warhunter.
I was just thinking the Hunter class. Sorry.
No, I know. I'm just wondering what do I get when I look for Warhunter?
You know, maybe this is these are the types of prototypes that never.
Warhunter is a first-person shooter. Where you take control of special agents and fight your way through the cold, mean scenery and find the arms dealer Talib.
Oh, no.
All reviews.
That's
mostly
that
negative.
Promising.
Oh, no.
I like how like everyone on this going. Call eyebrows raised simultaneously on the phrase, the arms hunter Talib. Every fucking person on this call just
look. This game.
Incredible.
Quote, you have classic FPS controls with WASD and arrows to move your character and mouse to point and shoot. So, I mean, just Heroes, like classic adventure games. Who could say? War Hunter could go any way. Any direction.
Could be a banner year.
All the reviews are negative. All the reviews.
Okay.
Wow.
So could still be a banner year for War Hunter.
War Hunter could be, you know, I don't know. Is this an early access? But I don't know. Hans, who only put 0.1 hours into it. This is the worst game I have ever played.
Well, Hans, I think you'd probably play more stuff before Come you. On, like, Hans. We don't know what your background is.
Come Although, on.
I guess if you're plunging your head into the bucket where games like War Hunter live, like you've probably seen some stuff. Like, you've definitely like given yourself over to the void. You've contemplated that maw. We're gonna take a minute and contemplate the maw, and we'll be back after a quick break. I'm so thirsty, and I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, hold on. So, I am on the Infernax Steam store page. Sorry, we might be back. We might be back. Who can say?
Who's to say?
Okay. Kata will figure it out.
I'm looking at a video with a live action component where...
I haven't seen this video, okay. But I can continue.
So, I think it feels like we might need to see it. But I can't seem to find it on YouTube. Not easily, at least.
Huh.
But if you look at like the fourth video... in there. It's got a picture of a guy holding his head.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah. Let's all hit play on this and just like get the vibe here. And then you can tell me, Patrick, if this is an app description.
Okay.
Make sure sound on.
Yeah.
Can be loud.
It's on.
All right.
It's on.
3, 2, 1, go.
Not having fun is boring.
He's got an abacus on his desk.
Whoa! What the f-
Hey, kid.
Whoa! Check this game out. Infernax, you got the power.
It's an NES card.
Defeat monsters. Use your skill. Explore the world. Watch out! Giant monsters.
He's playing the games of the night.
This isn't inaccurate.
Soundtrack. Project the world. Use powerful spells.
Spell is pretty powerful. Uses up a lot of MP.
This game is so intense, you'll think it's real. Are you ready?
This is pretty great.
Good. The cup full of smoke, the mug full of smoke is probably my favorite part.
Amazing.
All right, so Pat,
see, like, it does have strong, like mid to late 80s, like NES controller, NES commercial vibes. That is clearly that's what they're going for. Like with this, the whole like you know. Fog coming off the cup. That's good. I've not seen that.
So it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Feels like Infernax might be appealing to some nostalgia, might be making what's called nostalgia play for gamers of a certain vintage. Patrick, what is Infernax? And is that a good read?
It is. Infernax, I think, would like be best described as it's very Castlevania. Mm-hmm. Like you are I don't know, a knight that shows up and unholy creatures. You got to kill 5 bosses to get into the church. I don't know. The story is like sort of neither here nor there. It's not really what you're there for. It's a 2D action game with like the violence cranked way up, but not in a way like in a very funny like B movie, Evil Dead-ish like horror sort of way where like as you know, every time you die. Like the game cuts to like a black and red like really striking background as like whatever creature you died mauls you in some horrifying fashion, or the bosses that you're going up against are these screen filling, like organ spilling monstrosities. Like it is very like over the top and humorous, and just has like a really it just feels really good to play. It looks nice. The music's good.
Variety on the music, or is it all tend to be sort of that like shredding guitar, but like chip?
No, it's all pixel. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like chiptune-y stuff when you actually get into the game. It's not, there's no metal thrashing in the game itself. The game itself is much more akin to, you know, something you'd be playing on a souped up NES or something like that. But I don't know. I'd seen this game had been recommended by a couple people on my timeline, and I was looking for something to sort of like get my feet wet before like playing like an Elden Ring or something. Like I was like, I need to start like getting ready to get my ass kicked. And Infernax seemed like a good place to start. There's a couple of interesting things about it, kind of like wrinkles on like the otherwise pretty like formulaic template that it's playing with of like a sprawling sort of like Castlevania adventure game is, I don't know if there's any impact on the story quite yet, but there'll just be times where, like, for example, in the opening of the game, you'll come across some sort of cursed person. It's like, I feel horrible. Kill me. And then the game splits in two and says, like, what do you want to do? You want to kill him or you want to spare him? And like, it doesn't say that. Like, there's no voiceover, but the aesthetic, everything about it is like conveying that could be booming over like a loudspeaker. Like, what do you want to do, motherfucker? You want to save this poor soul or you want to kill him? And so I chose to spare them. All they did was go basically like, you asshole, as their flesh like turned inside out and they turned into the monster anyway. And then I was forced to kill them. I don't know if things change or if that's just a tutorial. It's unclear to me.
In one of the trailers, it says multi endings over one of these.
Yeah.
Things,
and so, like that, I had a sequence recently where, the game is semi-directed. Like it has a bit of a, kind of a Metroid element to it in that there are just like spots that are gated off because you don't have the right upgrade or the right item in order to progress. Like, you know, like that your weapon can't initially get through sort of like broken up rock. And so you have to wait till you find that upgrade. But one of the paths I was on this morning before work, I came across what appear to be a bunch of unruly, like mages. Like they seem to be into some like edgy magic shit. Like the way they're dressed, the way they're talking, doesn't seem like they're full on the up and up. And they kept talking about they kept talking about this guy down the road got a fucking library. We can make some sick spells if we could just have access to that piece of shit's library. I'm like, okay. So you kind of make note of that. And then I walked a little bit further down the way and I meet that person in the library and they're like, I got these ruffians out front. They make me feel uncomfortable. You know, like could you do something about them? I'm like, maybe. And so I go over and I expect what the game is going to confront me with is you want to kill these evil wizards, even though you don't know much about them. And also you don't know much about this guy in the library. And instead I go over and your character tells one of the the guys in this like traveling group, like, hey, person in the library is kind of uncomfortable. Like, you think you can move along? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, you know, you're probably right. We should probably get going. Do you want to stick around and have a drink? Like, you want to have a drink with us? And it seemed like very casual, but I was like, well, no, I'm on this quest. I'm not going to stick around and have this drink. So I just choose not to. And then they get up and they leave. I don't know what that consequence is. Like, what happens if I had sat and had a drink with them? The game isn't like very specific on the repercussions. Did I just align myself with some horrible person in the library? I don't know, but it adds like a fun wrinkle both in the presentation of the choice and then also just the fact that you're just doing a little bit more than, you know, whacking zombies. In addition to that, the game is also just extremely hard. It has this it presents itself very forward facing as this is a game that's going to kick your ass, not have a lot of checkpoints. Going to be one of those games. That said, it also has like a totally functional casual mode that does a couple of things. So, for example, when you go into when you're playing the game, as you attack enemies, you get experience points and they drop gold, which you can obviously pipe into an upgrade system and to buy new items and things like that. If you die on the normal mode, that all that stuff disappears. Like you have to get to a checkpoint in order to register that as being saved. And that is especially problematic in like the proper dungeons, which just every time I would get past a screen, I would go, you have to be fucking kidding me for how long I've been in here without any sort of relief.
Oh, no.
To the point that when I made it to the boss and then immediately died, I went, you have to be fucking kidding me. You expect me to do all of that in one go? To which, after dying multiple times, the game was like, hey, do you want to just switch it to casual mode? And like the specifics of the casual mode are betray, I think, what it's actually doing, which is just like, hey, we're going to put in one checkpoint in the dungeon. So it's just like you can kind of like do most of it, clock up there and go over to the roll over to the boss, and that your experience and gold will just carry over when you die. And like, so you can more properly, essentially you can upgrade more regularly without grinding, and sort of artificially power level yourself. And so I did switch over to that because I wasn't interested in spending that much time, like getting my way through the like kind of brute memorization of, the world. Also, I think the combat's all right, but it felt cheap enough at times that I was like, all right, I don't feel like that hit was fully earned. So I felt like the casual mode was meeting the game halfway, where it's like it pushes back on me just enough, but also I'm sort of frequently making enough progress that I'm continuing through the world and having a good time. So yeah, it's good. I like it. It's got like fun metal vibes. It kind of reminds me of the affection I had for the game Velfaris from a couple of years back, which is a 2D heavy metal action game. I think Velfaris is a much better game. That's like one of my favorite games of the last couple of years, but it definitely is like sitting in the same category of vibe that Velfaris had. I also, prior to saying the word Velfaris a minute ago, I was spending a long time explaining this game, hoping I'd remember what that game was called because I couldn't remember it. And then I wasn't quite sure how to Google search it. And I was just hoping that, well, as I talk about Infernax, maybe that part of my brain will just unlock. And it did. Like, right, just like precious moments before I went for the comparison. So shout outs to my brain for remembering that.
So Patrick, as interesting as Infernax seems to be, there's something else that's weird has been happening. Mm-hmm. It's maybe a bit infernal. Why am I getting several emails a day about Jeeps?
Right. Okay. So I'm going to send you guys a... I'm really glad that the last... But like Google's autocomplete was Modern Warfare 3 Jeep used.
Yeah.
I forgot that we looked up how much they cost. All right, so I'm going to send a link to TrueCar right here for y'all. This is, so multiple times now, Activision has done a partnership with Jeep to produce Call of Duty branded Jeeps. They've done it for Black Ops. They've done it for Modern Warfare 3. I don't know if that's the end of the partnership. They've done it multiple times. And someone originally wrote in, I think it was Lucas. Let me see if I kept that question. I didn't. I'm pretty sure it's Lucas, though. Anyway, they wrote in their neighborhood is one of these Jeeps. And they're just so curious. Who is this person? Why did they get this Jeep? What is the story here? And they've just never been able to have the opportunity to have that conversation, or even to have enough of a conversation tangential to the Jeep to potentially fill in some of those blanks on their own. And so, of course, I put out a call saying, look, the audience of Waypo Radio is vast. It is wide. They are all over the world. So, and as we've noticed, looking it up on TrueCar, these Jeeps have been resold. They've been recirculated. Maybe all of them are listed. The only ones that exist are here on TrueCar, rotting, hoping for a home. Turns out that's not the case. No. We got a number of emails from people answering the call to let us know about their experiences with these cars. Okay, so Oh, it's Mike, not Lucas. Okay, Mike, I did leave it in here. Okay, so this first one comes in from, okay, this is Alex. Dear Waypoint, I don't know how emblematic my story is of most Modern Warfare. Oh, no, they don't have one. That's a Jeep, that's Jeep adjacent. All right. Cameron from St. Petersburg, Florida writes, Hi, Waypoint crew. Fun fact, my dad owns one of the Modern Warfare 3 Jeeps you talked about in the most recent podcast. To my knowledge, he's never played the game or any Call of Duty for that matter. Back in 2012, he was looking for something to take off-roading outside Las Vegas, and this already had most of the features he was looking for. Since it's a limited edition, he assumed it would hold its value a little more than a comparable model should he decide to sell it. I have no idea if that's true, but that's his reasoning. That's great. I have to imagine that is maybe more of an explanation for why these are purchased than it is hardcore Call of Duty fans wanting the branding. This does, yes, please, Ren.
What part of Florida did you say this was from?
St. Petersburg.
That tracks.
I think I'm looking at the Jeep for sale on this website. I don't know if it's St. Petersburg. I'm going to check how close these two places are, but they're sure... There sure is a black 2012 Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 Jeep Wrangler sitting on this webpage.
You know, I would love if the follow-up to that email was, and actually...
We're selling it.
Now my dad is embarrassed about the Jeep. And is
hang on, his dad want to do off-roading in Vegas? Was that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe dad is in Vegas, but the person's riding from Florida.
Okay.
Yep.
So the Vegas Jeep might be in like a gulch somewhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he said he was in Vegas, the father. Let's see. Oh, so this is a different one. I'm going to paste these images here.
Whoa. No.
For the audience.
Yes.
Oh, my God. God, sorry.
Ren, do you want to take a shot at describing this?
I'm looking at a vehicle. It's my first pass. I'm looking at a vehicle that is less car or less Jeep and more sticker. I would say the sticker to paint ratio is fucking busted, but it's a mix of Superman stuff and like Justice League adjacent content. And then a bunch of Jesus iconography. And then also on the back is Jesus with the Superman S.
No, that's what that is? I was like, what? Is that like a fucking Justice League logo I don't know about?
Nope, that's Jesus.
No, that's Jesus.
That's just the Superman.
You just knocked over the
with
cross.
The Superman logo. Uh-huh.
I feel like that's sacrilegious.
What?
Yeah, they're all standing
there's only one
together.
Real Superman. Mm-hmm, that's Jesus.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's the Superman logo with the Renegade logo. And then, yeah, that is the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And I'm also noticing, let me really get in on this image. I'm going to make this image crispy real quick.
Hold on, the whole Jeep is in Pepsi blue.
Yeah. With red accents.
Including,
and those accents look like they've been, do we think they were there? They were, this
no,
was
that
added
was added
by the
that was,
owner.
That
yeah,
was,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the chances, folks, that the handprint on that, how do we feel about the handprint on
I don't
the
like it. I don't understand
passenger
it.
Mirror? Actually, that's driver's
you
side
think
mirror.
That was
no,
Jesus?
So yeah, it's passenger side mirror. That's what I'm thinking, is I'm wondering if it's some kind of like his handprint thingy on the passenger mirror, which kind of implies that like Jesus slapped your car a high five as you were driving past quickly, which like, that's kind of rude, dude. Don't do that.
I need that mirror.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna need the person that wrote in with these images. If you the next time you see this, could you get closer to the that rearview mirror to get a sense of is there something written on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's I'm like I just found the email because I was hoping there was a higher res.
No.
Because, like, there's something on that hand.
It looks like there's something
there's
on the hand.
There's some sort of, on the hand. Let's call it a stigmata on the handprint.
Okay. Wait, sorry. Stop. I'm picking up on something. So the weird symbol is, I believe, the Jeep Renegade logo.
Yeah, the weird, like, X-y thing.
Which implies to me that this is a Superman branded Jeep Renegade.
Yeah. Yes.
That has then been tricked out with Jesus and Superman.
So you're saying
Superman
maybe the
branded
much
decals,
like the Call of Duty branding.
Hold on. I think you're wrong.
You think I'm
like
wrong?
All these things look to me like vinyls somebody carefully applied themselves.
Yeah.
But no. Look at the I think this is true, but also look at the taillights.
Also, they got a parking ticket. Just putting that out there. There's a prominent parking ticket on that windshield. The headlights. Okay.
Look at the taillights. The taillights have that same shape, which suggests to me that this is a branded Renegade.
I'm not seeing a cursory Google search does not. There was a 2016 Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
There is
Jeep Renegade produced based on the Jeep Renegade that Bruce Wayne is driving at the beginning of that film, which is a crossover with the climax of Man of Steel when the General Zod fight is happening. But that's just a straight up black Jeep Renegade. No Superman logo.
This person bought a Jeep Renegade and then decided to add the word Renegade over it and the Jesus stuff and the Superman stuff on top. But it was
I'm not seeing any Renegade. There's no giant Renegade text on the Renegade
itself.
Sorry. I would like to note one thing. Does have the Superman one.
Yeah.
Is called the Dawn of Justice Jeep Renegade and does have Dawn of Justice kind of plastered across the front of the vehicle, which is fucking funny to me.
I will also note that there's a recurring motif of Superman hovering over a mountain range. And I was curious about that too, but on the view of the side view, in the rear window, past like the C pillar, there is a Move Mountains sticker.
Yes, that is the recurring motif, is the combination the Move Mountains with the Superman. Also,
say on the back window? Does anyone know? It's to the left. Oh, got Superman.
That's what it says.
I have another important question.
That's what it says.
What is life? We're gonna need teamwork here. The passenger right side door, underneath the window, has the Superman logo.
Yes.
Above that and to the left, there is something in script. Life
is.
No, I don't think. Is there an is there? I think it's
life.
Life is a journey.
Life is a journey.
Life. Not a destination.
Oh, and then it finishes under the Superman.
Oh, my fucking Christ.
I didn't see the text under the Superman logo.
Oh, my fucking Christ. Okay. Any other key details about this vehicle we feel the need to kind of like engage with as a group to kind of help process and like, you know,
there
learn.
Is a there is a car that I see once. So like I have the same path that I drive every morning to drop my kids off at daycare. And it's like once every 20 times I encounter a car with a similar aesthetic to this. I don't think it has the Christian iconography. I think this is more of a I love Dragon Ball Z and other associated games and anime situation.
That's a cool person.
And I've tried so desperately it's because it's clear our schedules line up in some way. And then it just depends, like, is this the day where we hit the lights at the same time? And I've just never been able to go fast enough to see who's in there. And I'll follow up if I'm able to answer that mystery. But I've seen a car like this, and it's in my neighborhood. I just don't know. I don't have an answer.
I will call out one last detail here.
Yeah,
please.
So I'm not going to sit here and pretend this is not tacky. It's extremely tacky. But that is not to say it is not carefully and thoughtfully done. Look at the wheel wells. Look at the the hubcaps on the wheel wells. There is a light spray of red trim paint.
There is.
Matching. Oh, like, there is a level of attention to detail here.
Wait, where is this?
So in the it's front, the easiest.
The front view.
Like, look at the front view.
Easiest. Yeah.
Oh, the front view. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the front view. Where is this?
The wheels.
In along the hubcap, basically. The spokes on the wheel. You will note that there's
a little bit of red.
Iridescent red paint.
Oh my fucking God.
On the interior, not on the outward facing side. No, 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 no. It's like red piping on the interior edge of the hubcap. Beautiful. It's not the right word. I forget. It's just wheels, right? It's just the wheels opposed to the tire. Yeah. I find this thing kind of touching because you know what it is? It's like what a little kid would dream their car would be.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. Here it is. It's got Batman and Superman and a curvaceous Wonder Woman with the hair just whipping past. And then some other people. I think it was the Flash and Cyborg because, you know, Justice Flash. League.
I think that's Green Lantern, but you're close.
But he wasn't in that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think this is necessarily representative of the Zack Snyder. I think this is a general Superman love.
Maybe.
I mean, I'm sure they love the Zack Snyder films. I'm sure.
You have to know is because they have the Jesus Superman, and Zack Snyder is the king of making Superman Jesus.
It's true.
But yeah, it's this Jeep is marvelous. I'm also nice downtown area.
Yeah.
I want to go there.
And so the last add-on to this comes in from Alex. It's a Dear Worry point. I don't know how emblematic my story is of most Modern Warfare 3 Jeep owners, but I had a regular customer at the liquor store I used to manage who drove a Modern Warfare 3 Jeep, usually with a very nice boat hooked up to the back. My assumption, given my many interactions with this customer, let's call him Kyle, is that he did not purchase the Modern Warfare Jeep with his own money. Kyle was a former frat guy in his early 30s, and his taste in beer was about what you'd expect. He'd come in roughly twice a week and purchase two large bags of ice and several 30 packs of Natural Light or Busch Light. Kyle always paid with $100 bills and was always accompanied by 3 to 4 of his bros. Kyle was loud, generally affable, and apparently well-liked by his friends. All in all, Kyle is mostly harmless, if a bit obnoxious. However, we'd always find the empty ice bags and beer cases in the parking lot so Kyle could go fuck himself. P.S. I was a Jeep driver for over a decade, and there's probably a reason that the one from the original email was always parked. Jeeps from that era are famously pieces of shit and break down all the time. I can't imagine the cool decals and dashboard plaque helped much in that regard.
And
thank you, Alex. Thank you, everyone else, for writing in. If you've seen other Modern Warfare 3 Jeeps in the wild, let us know. But I do feel like the two stories we have here, I think, run the gamut of what my brain assumed, which is Kyle's like frat boys that like, oh, I could take the door off. Like, I love the Jeep. I love Call of Duty. I love Natty Light. And then an oblivious dad who is like thinking about the market value and doesn't really give a shit what the car looks like. Those are the two spectrums of a Modern Warfare 3 Jeep owner. And we have solved the mystery, I think.
Amazing. And one last thing, Kyle, if you're listening to this, clean your shit up and go fuck yourself.
I think Kyle's on his boat.
Yeah.
Kyle's probably on his boat. Do you think Kyle doesn't have time for podcasts?
No, maybe Kyle's very into podcasts. And when he's out there with his bros, they just flip it on the plug it into the boat, and they're just going at 45 miles an hour on this boat, chugging Natty Lights and
listening
to
Waypoint Radio.
To a pod.
Yeah, they're not listening to the fucking just Joe absolutely Rogan experience is what they're listening
absolutely
to.
Absolutely, five.
You're
five
talking
blasted
to a frat boy
fries.
Right here. They might be.
They might
five
be.
Five totally wow. blasted frat boys being like, you know whose perspective we really need today on our gaming habits? Some random lesbian. That's what really we're really desperate for in yes. our day-to-day lives is some just big ol' lesbo to kind of tell us how she feels about Zinch.
That's called maturity. That's called hitting your 30s and understanding what you don't know. So you know what? Congrats, Kyle, on growing up.
Congrats, Kyle. Thanks, Kyle.
Hope the crash rating was good on that Jeep. It's build quality may have been sus, but fingers crossed they didn't cut corners elsewhere where it mattered. So I think we can probably call that a week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we nailed it. So we're gonna get in that parking lot. We're gonna pour all our ice into our cooler. We're gonna get on that Zodiac. We're gonna take it out to the lake house this weekend. Man, those sound like fun things to do. See, Kyle had it all figured out.
Just boats are great.
Especially ones you didn't have to pay for. See, the problem with
you don't want to own a boat.
Yeah.
You just want to know a Kyle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be Kyle, but I do want to be on Kyle's like weekend crew and be like, yeah, hey, man, let me like sort of make like you're like, hey, let me reimburse you for some of this beer. And, oh, no, okay, really? It's cool? Cool. And just like, that's where I want to be. Your dad's paying for all of it? Okay, that's neat.
I'll get you next time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Next time we do something like, my place, it's on me. Red carpet treatment the whole way. I don't know what we do. You know, I know it's not a lake house, not a boat, but like, it's a pretty good TV. just like
how
next
you feel
week?
About speakers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all right. No, that's cool. Like, it's Kyle's cool. Just, yeah. I mean, but, you know, Mikasa Tsukasa. For real. If you guys ever want to. But yeah, boat. Yeah, for sure. All right, well, that's a wrap on this episode of Waypoint Radio. If you want more from Waypoint, you can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, Facebook and YouTube, Waypoint Vice. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Patrick?
You can follow me at Patrick Klumpik.
Renata?
You can follow me on Twitter at Ren or Raven.
Ricardo?
You can follow me on... Fuck.
Wow, you caught him off guard.
Who the fuck is this guy? Who's this? Ricardo.
Oh, hello. I've replaced Cotto. you can find me at @A_Cotto_appears. Don't worry about it. That name is not Ricardo. It's real. It's real, though.
I did enjoy the stream being real weirded out by the arrival of a Ricardo in the voting options.
I still
options.
Can't believe the amount of people who were like, who's Ricardo?
So yeah, for your information, if you've not seen it, you should check out our Waypoint 101 PowerPoint presentations from last week. They were a whole lot of fun. Alliances were forged. We laughed. We cried. We cursed PowerPoint. It wasn't PowerPoint. It was Google Slides.
Some of us cursed. Everyone else had a browser compliant and everything worked fine.
Oh, well, excuse me for supporting the Mozilla Foundation. The last sentinels guarding... Hang on, didn't Mozilla...
Didn't they just go through a whole NFTs? Fucking crypto thing?
Yeah.
Mozilla NFTs?
I think they backed off it.
Mozilla hits pause on crypto donations following backlash. See, they hit pause on the crypto donations. You don't even need to worry about it. Mozilla always on the side of the angels. Thank you, Mozilla, for hitting pause on those crypto donations. Now, don't hit resume. Maybe just cancel the process and just like let it lie. Just let it lie. So check out the Waypoint 101 presentations we did last week. Check out Patrick and Picado. Picado had an epic Kingsfield stream.
That's our Dragon Ball Z Fusion dance name, right?
Picano!
Let me do a little Ricard trick. Is that anything?
God damn. No.
Is that anything?
No, that was fucking nothing.
Are you sure? Take
pass at it?
Do you want to take another card pass? Trick, Pat?
No. Rob, take another pass at it.
So, Ricard. No, I don't. Look, you gotta. We're doing a Ricard trick.
Ricard trick.
No,
listen, do okay, as Hillary Clinton suggests, everyone, and let's Ricard go to the polls.
Fucking crap.
And you can listen to, you can watch me and Ren stream Warhammer. So be sure and check that out. I think we'll be doing some more strategy and tactics games next week. We have a Waypoint 101 coming up on Kingsfield, because Patrick's been is trying to burn through that to make some space for Elden Ring. I think
we're not. No, we're gonna
take
we will,
the Elden Ring, you tarnished. Continue.
We settled on we're not gonna beat it. We're gonna beat it on stream.
Yeah.
So we Kato and I will continue playing Kingsfield, but we are on Monday evening scheduled to record a podcast with the popular Souls streamer Lobos Jr. Who's played a bunch of these games, including Kingsfield, who like I messaged like a couple of weeks back. I was like, hey, I saw like years back you played Kingsfield. You don't have to like prep or anything. Just like, you know, if you want to just come on. So we had a third voice and you play all these Souls games on stream. He's like, oh, that was so long ago. I'll just burn through the game again before we do the podcast. So, okay, man, whatever you want to do.
Legend.
So yeah, we're supposed to record that on Monday. So hopefully that'll be in your feed next Wednesday, as alongside, you know, thoughts on Elden Ring as well.
What about Get Contrarect? Huh?
Hmm.
Contrarect.
I don't feel like my name is prominent enough in there.
Doesn't need to be.
To-
Patrick.
That sounds good. Contrarect.
Patrick?
Or if Patrick? You just want more Waypoint, you can go to waypointplus.com and subscribe.
Yeah, if you want more
not
of
only
this,
do you get access to our
money.
Premium feed, but you're also helping support Waypoint and everything else we do here, like these streams or these cool brainstorming sessions.
Hey, if you're listening to this on Friday and started it right when it came out, we're probably streaming right now. Hey, look, three people came into the stream last week. We're like, oh, I wow. came here from the podcast.
You transformed the numbers on the stream.
Patrick, we had 1,500 people watching that stream. I think that is a good indication that plugging streams on podcasts is an effective onboarding strategy.
Especially
thank you very much.
The ones that are happening directly as people are listening to them.
Yeah, definitely shouldn't mention that at the top of the podcast as opposed to the bottom. But I'm not a marketing expert.
It's a little treat for the people who listen early. Welcome to the stream, gamers.
And if you missed it, the VOD will be up on Monday, probably.
Hang on, just splice this in.
Uh-huh.
To radio episode 462, I'm your host, Rob Zagney, but right now I'm streaming Anacrusis with the crew, so you can stop what you're doing and check it out right now live on twitch.tv/waypoint.
The Anacrusis, that's what they call us.
Can I left you enough there for like a seamless edit?
I'll...
Like just seamless?
Got it.
Yeah.
Done.
All right.
Call us the Friends of Kyle.
The theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. For now, we are calling it a week. We will talk to you again next week. Till then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But thank you, Kyle's dad, for the cool beach house weekend with the boat and the car. Like, capitalism did well for you, sir. Do you have any of those jobs lying around?
Please, sir. Punchy today, huh? Please, sir, I would like a job. That's how that this works, right?
Mm-hmm. Papa Kyle, please. Papa Kyle, my coffers are empty.
Oh no, I found a beer.
Oh.
Okay, Rob. This might have been a bad idea. I put it in my mug, and it's actually a little too... It's hard to get out of the mug. You're shit. Yeah. Rob,
will you play Nebulous Fleet Command this weekend?
Ren was telling me that, like, there's radar facing mechanics and shit. So, yes, Kato, I will play it.
I have it already.
Was there a PR for it or
No. I just got some. I got some birthday money, and I was like, "Fuck it, it's $20."
Because I searched all my mailboxes. Patrick, can you do a? Oh shit! Hold on.
Kata, can you keep some form of that?
I'll figure something out. Yeah, I'll figure something out.
Make that some sort of sign up.